Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
That'd be a very good time to apologize to the Toronto Raptors for anything that you have ever said or thought about that team, including the fact that you said that they were dead after the first two games of this series. And if you didn't say that, you thought it. You know you did. Hell, we all did, myself included. Apologies are in order, even if they haven't finished yet. Because from the looks of things, it seems like it's only a matter of time. Because the Toronto Raptors are good. Man, they're damn good. And they're tough. And Kawhi Leonard at this point is borderline indescribable. What this guy's doing right now is almost beyond words. I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my head around what he did last night. And I know the Milwaukee Bucks are also. Because that was not just his best game in a Raptors uniform. That may have been his best game in any uniform. Listen, it's easy to become a prisoner of the moment. But we are witnessing one of the all-time great playoff performances by an individual. As epic as that shot was in Game 7 against Philadelphia, what this guy did last night was even better. Milwaukee came out as you'd expect. They were attacking the basket. They were flying. The Bucks had just dropped a pair in Toronto. For the first time all season, the Bucks tasted their own blood. They were going back home. They were going to make things right. Except then Kawhi went to work. And if you remember only one thing from last night, make it this quote. Kawhi's not the best quote, but Kawhi said this, quote, "I'm not afraid of the moment. I enjoy it."
I'm not afraid of the moment. I enjoy it.
That's the damn truth. You want to talk about a take aging badly? How about the take? How about this take? You want to talk about owing somebody an apology? Can you believe folks actually questioned this guy's toughness? Actually questioned this guy's ability to lead? And if there's even one dope still walking around doing any of that, you need to stop doing that immediately. In fact, you should have stopped doing that long before he played 52 minutes in Game 3 on a bad leg. Same with questioning his ability to lead, because this guy's proven he can lead a team that he's been with for only one season, a team he probably didn't even want to go to. And now he has them, that team, where they've never been before. But then again, there's so much more to this guy. There's so much more to Kawhi. Then you've got Kawhi, the playmaker. That Kawhi was in full effect last night, and that's new. That's new. The rap on him, the knock on Kawhi is, if you run guys at him, it can cause problems. The thinking had been, this guy can do everything on an elite level except set up his teammates. Yo, that's dead too. Until last night, because Milwaukee was throwing different looks at him. They were tilting the floor to him, and it still didn't matter. He recognized what they were doing, and he made them pay every single time. 9 assists, more than he's ever had. 9 assists. And all 9 of those assists set up 3-pointers. Toronto hit 18 threes last night. Kawhi either made or set up 14 of them en route to that win. So add that to the asinine raps about Kawhi. He's not tough. He doesn't lead. He can't set up guys around him. Bullcrap, bullcrap, bullcrap. And the big beneficiary of Kawhi's playmaking was another guy with a monster game last night. Fred Van Vliet. FVV was B-I-G. Hell! In that Philadelphia series. And in the first 3 games against Milwaukee, let's just say Fred was not exactly at his best. And by that, I mean Fred couldn't make a shot. My guy was 7 of 44, 3 of 25 from deep. But in the last 2 games, he's found something. 3 of 3 from 3 in Game 4. Started to feel it. Then this in Game 5.
Lowry stepping back on Mirotic. Fires it out. Van Vliet. Yes. Things have changed for Fred Van Vliet. Here's Van Vliet for 3.
Thank you.
Here is Van Vliet.
There you go. No hesitation.
Van Vliet. Yes.
And Van Vliet is having words with Gucci Mane.
Van Vliet for 3 again. Van Vliet for 3 again. Set up by Leonard. Vliet for 3 again.
Again. 7 of 9. This guy's gone from hitting 12% from deep to hitting 80%. So what changed? What's his secret? He said, quote, zero sleep. Have a lot of babies and go out there and let loose, end quote. All right, so is there something to that? I mean, seriously, between games 3 and 4, Fred Van Vliet Jr. was born. Ever since then, Fred Van Vliet Sr. can't miss. Hell, if that were the case, Alvin would host this show. If that were the case, Alvin would host the world, right? Anyway, so it's got to be the kid, right? Dude. It's got to be the kid. Fred had the kid. Not only the kid, but he had Junior. So it's got to be the kid. With Junior came a complete change in perspective. Everything changed with the birth of the child. It's the kid, right? Ask Pops. And he's not willing to share any of the credit. In fact, Pops wants all of the credit. All for the old man, none for the baby.
I'm not giving him no credit. It's all me. You know, it's all the work I've been putting in. Just got to stay the course, put a lot of work in. And obviously to have a big life help, you know, it's clear your mind up a little bit. There's a little bit of extra motivation as well.
I love that. Oh, no, it's all me. I'm not giving him any credit. It's all me. He's right. The old man was huge last night. In fact, all the Raptors were. Again, they were dead after 2 games. Now they're a win away from winning the thing. And to quote Kawhi Leonard, I'm not afraid of the moment. I enjoy it.
I'm not afraid of the moment. I enjoy it.
So what's that say about the Bucks? I'm not saying that they're afraid of the moment, but it sure as hell seemed as if the moment got to them last night. Let's just say the Bucks were not exactly bathed in glory at the end of that game. In fact, that was the most un-Bucks thing that I've seen in a long, long time coming down the stretch. They couldn't even foul when they wanted to foul late in the game. I mean, the hell is this?
Swarmed by Milwaukee. Lowry gets it. Sends it over to Siakam and a slam dunk and the Raptors lead. It's a 2-possession game.
At the end of that game, Miami, or Milwaukee, I should say, was all over the place. In a bad way. Kawhi, though, was all over the place in a good way. Back to Kawhi for a minute. I've only touched on the assists so far. Do not sleep on the 35 points or the 7 rebounds or the fact that he carried the weight when he was playing with a number of bench players in the second half or the fact that Kawhi was stepping back and doing things like this.
Leonard with Lopez there. Step back to 3. Yeah! Yes, he did! The best player in the 2019 postseason.
Best player in the 2019 postseason. I mean, I can pose the question, is he the best player in the game right now? Is he the best player in the world right now? San Bernardino! Listen, also, do not sleep on the fact that this guy absolutely dominated Giannis on the other end of the floor. If you thought Giannis had a quiet night with 24 points, it was dead silent when Kawhi was guarding him, as the great Tom Haberstroh pointed out. When Kawhi was on Giannis, the freak had 10 points on 37 possessions. 10 points on 37 possessions. A guy who's likely to win multiple MVPs in his career. A guy who very well becomes the face of the league. Was erased by Kawhi Leonard. It's amazing. If Kawhi were a defensive specialist, and all he did was show up and shut down Giannis, he'd be the most important guy in this series. Instead, he's a defensive specialist shutting down Giannis, who's also giving you 35 points, 9 assists, and 7 boards. And then after all of that, after arguably his greatest game ever as a player, he chases that with the most literal post-game interview ever.
Kawhi, it took chipping away at a double-digit deficit, but where did your team find the advantage in the final minutes?
We made shots and got stops on the defensive end. We got to limit them to one shot. They're a great offensive rebounding team, great offensive team. We can't get them 2 or 3 looks at the basket.
If a series doesn't start until somebody wins on the road, it started tonight, but how do you beat the Bucks 4 times in a row?
I don't know. I haven't done it. We're taking it 1 game at a time, and, you know, I'm just excited that we got the win tonight.
With 1 win away until a trip to the NBA Finals, what's this team's mentality with history on the line?
I mean, I haven't even gotten the locker room yet. We just finished the game. But, I mean, we wanted to come out here, get the win. We weathered the storm early, and I'm going to see what we're going to be talking about in the locker room.
Congratulations, Kawhi.
My guy. Contractors can rely on Ferguson to provide a winning game plan for any job, any day. Thanks to their pro pickup service, you can choose from thousands of products to order online and pick up in-store, which makes doing business with Ferguson the easiest part of your day. Howard, Beck. Howard, good to have you. How are you?
Doing great, Romy. You?
Good, Howard. Great to talk to you. I want to start by saying you've got a great piece up on Bleacher Report today about the fact that we're witnessing the NBA playoffs without LeBron for the first time in 14 years. I want to ask you about that in a minute, but based on what we've seen from LeBron in the playoffs over the past decade plus, how does that inform, Howard, the way we watch Kawhi and Giannis last night?
Well, the fascinating thing, and I think one of the good things for the NBA, it's a mixed blessing because ratings are down a little bit, and they certainly miss LeBron. I think we all miss debating, analyzing, dissecting him to an extent. But it's given oxygen and spotlight and room for all of these other stories to emerge and other players to kind of show who they are. Kawhi Leonard, at times in this postseason run, has drawn comparisons, not hyperbolic comparisons, but valid ones, to Michael Jordan. Not at that level, right? But his style of game, the way the diversity of his attack, Kendrick Perkins and others have been on TV saying it. And so Kawhi has been probably underappreciated because, look, he's an understated guy and he was in San Antonio all those years, and even winning a finals MVP didn't seem to do it. But with LeBron off to the side for the moment, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant for that streak that he was on before he went down, Giannis, all these guys are getting a little bit more exposure because we are not all sucked into the LeBron vortex. And I say that, with all due respect, and as somebody who certainly spends a lot of time in that vortex and enjoys it. LeBron is fun to watch. He's fun to talk about. I don't think there's a single player, not only in today's NBA, but the last 15 years probably, who generates as much interest and an opinion as he does.
Listen, Howard, for perspective, I think Kawhi does belong in that conversation. He had 35 last night. That gives him 11 playoff games this year with 30 or more. The only guys to have more before the finals are Jordan and Olajuwon, so he's earned the right to be in that conversation. But it's not just what he's doing on offense. What do you make of what Kawhi and the Raptors are doing to the Bucks on defense, especially in the half court?
Yeah, they've really exposed where the Bucks' weakness is, or at least highlighted it and attacked it. And look, we could talk about the fact that the Raptors, they're an elite defensive team, as are the Bucks, and that the Raptors, against anybody, are going to make you a little more ordinary, or just challenge you, make you work a little harder to score. But I think that, I don't want to go too far with this, but I think that what they've also shown is that Giannis has another stage of development left. Giannis is the likely MVP. He got my vote, and he earned that in the regular season. But if they fail in this conference finals, and that's really too strong of a word, I feel like the Bucks are so far along, or so much further along than we could have anticipated. Nobody projected them being in the conference finals before the season started. That it's going to show that Giannis still has that other level, and that's fine. He's 24. He is just now emerging as a superstar in this league. And he's done it by being just an impossible force to stop when he's in transition or when he's got a lane to attack the basket. But as we know, he's not a shooter yet. He's working on it. It's coming. I give him credit for at least shooting in games, unlike Ben Simmons, who's allergic to even taking a jump shot. But Giannis has to smooth out the jump shot. He's got to fix his free throws, for that matter. And that will take a team like Toronto with great defense and force them to make other adjustments. Right now, they've been able to just simply close off the paint knowing that he's not going to kill them from the mid-range or from deep.
Howard Beck joining us. All right, so all of that said, if you had to say it right now, Howard, how do you see the rest of the Eastern Finals going? Does Toronto wrap it up tomorrow night?
Oh, man. I've felt like this series was a coin flip even before this was a series. It always seemed like these two were on a collision course for each other. They were separated by two wins in the regular season, and there's no obvious advantage one way or the other. And granted, the Raptors have won the last three in a row, and now all of a sudden it looks like they've got all the momentum, and we're all victims of recency bias, and so it's easy to predict the win, especially going back to Toronto. That is where I would lean also, but it's not going to surprise me at all if the Bucks have one more kick in them to get this thing back to Milwaukee and make it a Game 7. So I wish I had a prediction for you, Romy. I just don't. I think it's still a coin flip.
Fair enough. Howard Beck joining us. Now, back to your piece about LeBron. I mean, there's so many different ways of calculating how long it's been since there was a postseason without LeBron. One of them, as you pointed out, is the last time he missed the playoffs, AI was the scoring champ. Giannis was 10 years old. And since then, the Knicks have gone through 9 coaches. How incredible is that run of playoff appearances and final appearances then from LeBron?
It's crazy. I mean, we've taken him so much for granted. We just don't even think twice about it. He's just there always. And I know people are like looking at this now and saying, well, it just his time has passed and LeBron can't do it anymore. LeBron's numbers this season, Rome, were basically on par with where they were a year ago. He averaged 27-8-8 and still at a really high, a very high efficiency. He just didn't have help around him, and he got hurt for a month. And the Lakers had a bad roster and are just, it's just been kind of a mess. They get him the right help, he's right back in it. But yeah, 14 years since he was last out. It was 2005. The Sonics were still in Seattle. It was a different world. I mean, George Bush was still president. We hadn't even got, like, Obama hadn't had a single term yet the last time LeBron was not in the playoffs.
It's insane.
A staggering streak.
It's insane. Howard Beck joining us. I mean, it's amazing when you look at it that way. So right now, LeBron is spending time with his family. You know he's watching the playoffs. But based on your reporting and your knowledge of him, how do you think that he feels about not playing in the playoffs?
Yeah, not. It doesn't take a lot on this one. Like, anybody's guess would be the same as the reporting, which is that it's driving him nuts, and I think he's probably bored out of his skull. Look, he had the groin injury, and I don't think he was ever fully 100% after it. And so, to an extent, after all the games he's played, and he's got, like, I don't know how many extra seasons I calculated, 3 extra seasons at least over the last 13 years that he's logged, getting a rest for his body and his mind is probably not the worst thing, but it's also definitely not what he wants. And it's nice to go to Cabo with the family. It's nice to go to your kids' basketball tournament in Atlanta, which he did. It's nice to work on Space Jam 2, but you know that's not what LeBron wants to be doing right now, and you know it's killing him.
Howard Beck joining us, a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. So, Howard, then you've got this notion of what's it like without him. As you point out, the ratings are down a little bit, but it's giving guys, other guys, a chance to step up. But then you've got Golden State. Draymond Green told you, quote, "It's just weird to look over there to know that you're going to play somebody completely different. It's kind of a mind bleep," end quote. That's a really strong comment. What do you make of it?
Well, as we know, Draymond and LeBron have, you know, kind of this love-hate thing going on. You know, Draymond's been on LeBron's show, The Shop. They're buddies off the court. They have, wrestled on the court almost literally. They've had some low moments, but there's just, I think, great respect there across the divide. And this entire Warriors dynasty has been defined by LeBron. Like, among the other things that are striking about this, their 4 finals up until now were all against him. And beating him the first time was the crowning achievement of becoming champions for the first time in this era. And losing to him the next year was what forced them to reassess and then go grab KD. And so everything that they've done has been against a backdrop of LeBron James. And this is the first time where he's just not figuring in. Now you could say, well, he wasn't in the East anyway, so they weren't going to match up with him in the finals again. True, but there was a good chance that they were going to meet in the playoffs somewhere in the West had the Lakers made it, and those ratings would have been through the roof because LeBron versus the Warriors is really compelling theater. No matter how much people might say that they were getting sick of it, the ratings were always off the chain for the last several years in the finals, and LeBron versus the Warriors again would have been great theater again.
So, Howard, if these guys are being really honest, Golden State, I mean, do you think they would admit to you or anybody else that there's something of a letdown because the Raptors or the Bucks are not the LeBron Cavs?
Yeah, I don't think the players will look at it that way. It's just not the way that players think. But I think for the fans, it's going to be a mixed bag too. It just depends on where people fall on that LeBron spectrum, whether they love seeing him play at the highest level on the biggest stage, or whether they are tired of him, as some people are, and I get that too. But I think for the Warriors, you know, to make a 5th finals, something that no team has done since the Celtics back in the 50s and 60s, is huge. And if they win it and they three-peat, and they'll be the first team since the Shaq Kobe Lakers to do that, they'll have 4 in 5 years. they won't care if it's against Kawhi, against Giannis, against LeBron. It's just the achievement is incredible in its own right.
Howard Beck, my guest. All right, so finally, in the meantime, Howard, of course, the NBA Finals will play out next week, and it's going to be without LeBron, but apparently Kevin Durant will not be ready to go at the very start. How worried should the Warriors be about Durant's health right now?
This is really weird, Rome, because I, you know, when he went down that night, of course, the immediate speculation was Achilles, and that's it. He's done. And what does that say for his future? It turns out to only be a calf, but I mean, it's one where every time that they give an update and he's still far off, you wonder how serious it is. Do we know the full story yet? I think it's concerning. In terms of just the short term, look, can they win a championship if he doesn't play a single minute in the finals? Yeah, I think they can. I think that what they've been showing us lately is that the heart of that old team, pre-KD, still exists. Not as deep as it was, not as young, but Curry, Clay, and Draymond are the core of a phenomenal team still. And Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala, those guys have all been there since the start. And can they beat the Bucks or the Raptors without KD? I think they can, but I think it's going to be a much tougher task, clearly. And, you know, and then we'll have all the questions about, well, what does it mean that they won without him? And what does that mean for his free agency? And, you know, we'll spend the next month talking about it.
We will. Senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report and the host of the Full 48 podcast, Howard Beck, once again in the jungle. Howard, great job as always. Thank you very much. Always good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure, Romy. Thank you.
Hi, this is Jim Rome. When you want expert advice, you go to a pro. Some folks happen to consider me a pro at sports, and as a pro at sports, here's some simple advice that can help you. When you're hitting the sports book and a buddy of yours tells you he has a sure thing, you want my pro tip? Go the other way. There's a reason why casinos pop up from the ground every single week in Vegas. There is no such thing as a guarantee in sports, unless it's Golden State winning another NBA championship. And when you're looking for pro tips on vehicle maintenance or repair, look no further than O'Reilly Auto Parts. Whether it comes to replacing your battery, getting advice on proper car maintenance, or even just getting the best bang for your buck, their expert team can help you out every step of the way. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. So the Milwaukee Bucks may have lost Game 5, but Green Bay Packers offensive lineman David Bakhtiari won the night. That's because DB was in attendance last night, flexing one of the most timeless and well-respected displays of badassery, the beer chug. And it wasn't just a beer chug. It was back-to-back-to-back beer chugs from his courtside seat while being broadcast on the Jumbotron. Three beers put down in 15 seconds flat. And how the hell was your Thursday night? If you missed the viral moment of Game 5, the Bucks shoved a camera in his grill knowing full well he was going to put on a show. And that's because he has inhaled beers on the big screen already during this series against the Raptors. So they knew what they were going to get. But what made last night break Twitter is that after he made two brewskis disappear in 11 seconds, the camera then cut to Aaron Rodgers, also sitting courtside. Under Aaron's seat was a half-full cup of suds that he lifted up to his crowd, or to the crowd, tipped back to his grill, and, well, nothing. My guy could not polish off the chug. The beer went down like the Game of Thrones series finale. And before Rodgers could even hang his head in shame, the camera cut back to DB, who downed a third 12-ouncer in 4 seconds. So if you're keeping score at home, 36 ounces down the hatch for the big fella, 6 ounces for Aaron, and the internet roasted Aaron coast to coast for not being able to hang. That's what happened last night. Right now, I've got this dude's back, because my feeling is, and I believe this truly, Rodgers was playing the heel on purpose. I believe that. There's no way Aaron Rodgers would voluntarily pick up a half-full beer from underneath his seat that no one knew he even had in front of an arena that worships him if he knows he's got no shot at finishing it. For who? For what? Why would he do that? Nobody knew he had the beer. Believe me, Everybody knows what they can and what they can't do with a beer when it comes to chugging. If you see the video, you could see Aaron playing up the struggle by putting his finger in the air as if to ask the crowd to be patient while he works on 6 ounces of malted hops and barley. Dude's an actor. An actor. He just starred in the biggest TV show of all time a few weeks back. He's got a flair for the dramatic. And behind being an actor, he is a quarterback. David Bakhtiari protects him. So there was nothing more to see here than a quarterback returning the favor and giving back to an underappreciated offensive lineman who deserves some long overdue shine. He was picking his guy up. Heady play. Unselfish play, if you ask me. And then at some point during that game, Rodgers tweeted out, quote, "Make it a scotch next time, David Bakhtiari."
I love scotch. I love scotch. Scotchy, scotch, scotch. Here it goes down, down into my belly.
Oh, hell yeah. I don't root, but you best believe I am rooting for this series to make it back to Wisco for Game 7 so I can see these dudes trade pulls from a bottle of Macallan. I'll say this. How awesome are Bucks games? You've got an MVP quarterback and a Hall of Famer and his offensive lineman putting down beers for the amusement of the crowd. Hell, even Pete Davidson, a.k.a. Christian Yelich, was chugging for the big screen too. And at one point, after Bakhtiari had already polished off 3 beers, he grabbed somebody's full can and went all Stone Cold Steve Austin with it. Bakhtiari, 316. Didn't spill a drop all night long, which is so much better than like those dopey baseball celebrations where guys like Madison Bumgarner dump a six-pack on their face and they call that a chug. Like, what I'm getting at is this. The Raptors have unsolicited back rubs at their games. The Bucks have a local superstar. In fact, superstars pounding brewskis at theirs. So you tell me who's doing it better. Sure, the Bucks lost that game, but David Bakhtiari won the night with an assist from Aaron Rodgers. In other words, fear the beer. And as far as DB goes, you might not have known him until last night, but the football world and those who already know what this guy was all about. I mean, there are good left tackles in the NFL, and then there's David Bakhtiari. Aaron Rodgers, most critical guy up front. Feet, strength, technique, all elite. And obviously, his beer-chugging game is on par with his ability to crush pass rusher's spirits. This guy was tremendous. At least the beer was real. Remember when Tom Brady slammed his? There was that rap that, yeah, beer's not even beer. That's not real. There's no way he did that. Remember Robert in Oakland lobbing me a telephone call, trying to call BS on that, saying, come on, Rome. There's no way that was real beer. This time we go to Oakland. Rob.
I'm a diehard Raider fan, and I'm calling BS on that beer, Chuck, just like I'm calling BS on that Tuck Rule. And I'll tell you exactly what was in that glass. It was TB12 with frosting.
Come on, man.
No.
You don't like that color.
I don't like that color. Not a very good color.
Damn, Raider fan in the house. Brad Keselowski is my guest. Brad, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Man, that's a heck of an introduction. I need to carry you around when I go places. Thank you very much.
My man, you earned it. You've had a really nice run, and you're keeping it going. In fact, you had a win, Brad, at Kansas, which was the last points race, and you're tied with Kyle Busch for the most wins this season. So as we get to the end of May, how pleased are you with the way you've been running and how the team has performed so far this year?
Well, Jim, I don't know if I could ask for a better start than to win 3 races so early in the season. You know, people ask me all the time about what makes someone great in the sport, and it's I always tell them, you got to be able to win on all kinds of different tracks. And believe it or not, you know, they say in baseball, if you can hit 3 out of every 10 balls, you're probably going to be a Hall of Famer. Well, in motorsports, if you can win 1 out of every 10 races, you're going to be a Hall of Famer. So that means you got to win about 3 to 4 races a year. If you do the math real quick, 38 races a season. And to win 3 races so early in the season, it feels really good. It gives you a lot of pep in your step, and we're excited about it. But, you know, the thing is, you can't get too caught up in your own press clippings. You got to go out and deliver the next week, and we're committed to doing just that this weekend in Charlotte for the big races.
It is a big weekend, and I want to get to that in a minute. Brad, it's one thing to win, but it's another to win the way you have so far. For instance, you've had some great wins in your career, but that win at Kansas by 0.205 seconds in overtime was pretty amazing to watch. What was going through your head before that final restart?
Well, big thing is, you know, NASCAR changed a bunch of the rules to the cars between this season and last season, and the way they drive is entirely different, and you have to really be adaptive to the rules changes and to the car, how it plays out, because drafting is more important than it ever has been for Ben. Drafting rule simply just, hey, if you're behind another car, the toe that you get off of their aerodynamics when you're behind them, and you have to time all of that just perfectly. Mistime it by a little bit, and you'll end up in the wall, or you won't make a pass for the lead. And the last few laps, I hit it just perfect and drove up from 8th or 9th on the restart to win the race, and it was a really, really good feeling.
Brad Keselowski is the driver of the number 2. He joins us once again. Brad, you dedicated that win at Kansas to Mike Mittler, who recently passed away. What kind of an impact did Mike have on you and your career?
Jim, Mike is one of those unsung heroes, and you hear about all types of people in sports, but Mike was one of those people who ran almost like a boarding house for racers. It's a place where you went if you were a race car driver and you had talent, but you couldn't find a place to go. Quite frankly, for me, I didn't have a place to live, and he put me up in a hotel, and I spent 6 months living out of a hotel behind his shop in Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, before I got my real big break. And he did that not just for me, but he did that for, you know, probably dozens of other race car drivers and helped further their career. And a bunch of them made it up to the same level that I'm in, Carl Edwards, Jamie McMurray, and a whole list of them, and wouldn't have been there without them. And so it really sucks when guys like that pass away because they mean so much to the sport. And they're unsung heroes. People don't hear about them every day because, you know, they don't want to be heard about every day. They just want to do the right thing. They don't care if they get the credit for it. But when those type of people are lost, it really puts a lot of things in perspective. And you know, there's people like that in all kinds of sports. You hear about people like that in basketball or in baseball and so forth that help young athletes through their careers when they're struggling to make ends meet. And he was that guy for me and so many others, and really hurt to see him go that weekend, and it was fitting to win the race in his hometown track.
Well said, Brad. That's a really nice tribute by you. Brad Keselowski joining us. So that was the 30th Cup win of your career. It's a really nice number. I understand that you're focused on the next race and getting ready for that, but have you had a chance to reflect on what that number 30 means?
Yeah, I mean, it's look, I don't get to vote my own place in the Hall of Fame, nor should I. But if you look at all the race car drivers out there, 30 wins is kind of one of those, you know, thresholds to being a Hall of Fame driver. And, you know, no matter who you are or what you do, you want to be great at what you do. And to have 30 wins and to know that, you know, one day I'll have an opportunity to be in the Hall of Fame just based on that is pretty sweet, I'll tell you what.
That is the threshold. That is the number. There's no doubt about that, Brad. Brad Keselowski joining us, and that brings us to Memorial Day weekend, and that obviously is always a special weekend in motorsports. Sunday, you've got the 60th running of the Coca-Cola 600. What's that race mean to you?
Well, Memorial Day weekend, as you said, is the biggest weekend in racing. It's one of the few weekends, I think, of the year that motorsports kind of dominates the landscape, and we're really proud of that. And always want to put on a good showing accordingly. From, you know, Formula One competing in Europe, which is kind of like what soccer is to the States, Formula One is to motorsports. It's the big show in the, you know, Europe and globally. And then, you know, here in the United States, we have the Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600, one in Indiana, one here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And those are huge races for us. The longest race of the year is the Coke 600, and I came close to winning and haven't quite pulled it off, but hopefully this will be the year. And with it being connected so closely to Memorial Day, you know, a lot of motorsports is based around those who have served the country. I know a lot of the referees, inspectors, the guys that work on the cars have all served. And, you know, the people who founded NASCAR, a lot of people don't know this, NASCAR was founded in 1948. They were veterans from World War II. So, you know, the history of NASCAR in the military runs really, really deep. And it's always a pleasure to get to continue to honor that Memorial Day weekend and give thanks to those that make it possible for us to do crazy things like drive cars in a circle or watch sports. We're so privileged to get to do those things.
Or sit and talk about the sports. What a great point. Brad Keselowski joining us. You know, back to your point about it being the longest race of the season. Brad, how much of an endurance test is that for you and for your team? For example, every race takes a toll on drivers, but how significant is that toll when you've got to go 600 miles?
It's one of the biggest challenges of the year physically. To put in perspective, the last few years I've ran that race, I've lost somewhere between 6 to 10 pounds over the 4 hours. And so that means over the last few days I've tried to put on 2 or 3 pounds just to be ready for it, staying hydrated, staying in front of it. You know, once you lose your physical strength, you lose your mental strength. You get tired and you start to make mistakes. And you make mistakes at 200 mile an hour, bad things happen. So you've got to be on top of it. You got to be in shape. You got to be ready for it. It's a very difficult challenge.
Hey, Brad, as well as you've been running, you've said that the Hendrick cars are the best cars. So are you just hyping these guys so you can beat them, or do you really feel that way right now?
Jim, you know me too well.
Right?
No, they're really fast right now. They've been they struggled.
Uh-oh. You go ahead and roll that week that was. Now, welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is great to have you. Let's start with some golf.
What's the matter with you?
4 majors in a lifetime is incredible. 4 majors in 23 months, though, is straight stupid.
Stupid.
Ridiculous. Brooks Koepka is not getting a ton of love.
It's New York. What do you expect when you're half choking it away?
Koepka goes out, and he out-tigers Tiger, and a lot of you are like, boring.
Yeah, so in other words, it's great when Woods is doing it to somebody else, but when it happens to your guy, then the guy doing the curb stomping wears a stupid hat.
Kevin Hart joining us.
In these next 3 seasons, I feel like we really do have a shot. You're going to see me in Philadelphia, and I may eat some horse poop. It might have to go down. I may have to go and taste a little batch of horse manure.
Tapping it into Kawhi. Kawhi Leonard, left!
So does that look like a dude that was playing on a bad wheel for 50-plus minutes? That's an entire team, an entire fan base sitting on Kawhi's shoulders every single time he gets the ball. Brian Kelly, my guest.
I am a Peloton owner now. I absolutely love it. I love the competition of it. You know, with our style of life, really busy. So if we can get 45, that's a treat.
Credit to Brazil for having the character to throw with him.
Like, I heard that, and I felt that. That punch was so hard, I was checking my own teeth. I was trying to stand up from my couch, and I couldn't after that punch. Travis Schlenk is my guest. Travis, really nice to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today, Romy?
We ordered a giant rubber black
rubber donga
to arrive the next day. You gotta love the next day shipping hustle.
Hi.
If you're gonna talk betrayal, it's only with Rob.
Magic looking to save his own rep, even if it meant burning the organization that he allegedly loves right to the ground, is talking about backstabbing.
Rob was saying things.
Magic gonna magic, Lakers gonna Laker. Talking to Arash Markazi.
Again, one of the worst days in Lakers history, and they've had a ton recently.
Chris Mannix, do you see any end in sight, or is this just who they are and the way it's going to be for quite some time?
No, but of course it's not realistic. I mean, this is going to end in a disaster.
Tired of hearing Roger Lodge verbally make love to the Patriots and make out with Tom Brady's butthole.
I can't believe I ran that guy. Roger, I owe you the right to respond.
Enough cannot be said about my Tommy.
The guy did flop, and the guy was selling the contact, trying to draw the foul. And there really is no reason for anybody to call 911 now. Stay home or you're gonna die.
And now you're going to die.
Keenan Lowe.
In life, I've never flinched. I've worked for everything I've gotten in my life. So in that moment where it takes someone not to flinch in order to make the difference, you know, I found myself being able to react and react on my instincts and trust myself and my judgment.
Dude, President Eisenhower is here.
It's Dwight
D. Eisenhower. Hello, Mr. President. Hey, Ross, you're always welcome to come back. He's got great hair, and he quit this job to work for the Alhambra City Government. Or Monterey Park. San Gabriel. Rosemead. South Pasadena.
Get over center and dribble out the clock.
Toronto. There are times when I roll in here and I forgot to set the alarm clock. It happens to us all.
Yeah, it happens.
Cube joining us.
I wouldn't be here talking to you, Jim, without John Singleton, because I just wanted to be the best rapper in the world. He taught me how to write, to direct. You know, John Singleton was everything to me. Without John, you wouldn't have Friday.
Bye, Felicia.
Ben Mesrick.
I thought you were going to ask about Toby in Houston. I spent way more time yesterday looking into Toby in Houston than one should. I had never seen the word crank used in that fashion before, and I was right, that's what that intrigued me.
What in the world is the deal with Drake? Why is he giving Nick Nurse a massage during game four? Why is he roaming wherever he wants on the sideline? Please, somebody do something about this right now. Please.
It's good to have you, Bob. How are you?
I don't see the problem with Drake. I mean, they let Sarah Jessica Parker on the track at the Derby.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. Not Bob.
Where's the near side? Hit early. Where's the flag?
Sean Payton obviously got absolutely robbed against the Rams on that call that was not made.
Honestly, their stages that first week was miserable. You have to understand at some point you let that go, and here we go. The focus changes, and I think our players are pretty good about that as well.
So that was so. With the Ben Mazmarak, you know, breaking it down.
Email.
You interviewed LeBron. Get Bronny Jr. on the show. Then get Bronny's grandpa, Delonte West, and you will have three generations covered. You are straight blocked.
How play is that, man?
Jim, you know, it amazes me after all these years that you still bring just the passion, the energy, every single day. Mediocrity is not an option, and I appreciate that so much. And my buddy's name is Jim Ross.
Wreck him!
Hey, Virginia, tell Flick how his ass tastes. The local weatherman does what the bleep he wants.
Smoke weed, talk bleep like Roger Lodge.
Talk to you next week. It sounds good.
Good stuff, Jim. Thank you.
It's always good. I always love talking to you, Jim. L-O-R-E-L-E-I, Green Bay.
What a kook.
Donuts. Sorry, I'm off the clock.
Good night now.
Nice job, Alvin. I thought it was a great week, and I was right. It was. Austin Riley is my guest. Austin, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Man, it's great to have you. I got to ask you about yesterday. So you're coming off that win in 13 innings. As I mentioned, Austin, you went 3-for-6. You had the game-tying home run in the eighth. You drove in the go-ahead run on the top of the 13th. How much of a blast was yesterday?
And it was awesome. You know, to hit the home run to tie it up, and then, you know, to hit the game running RBI was just, you know, kind of icing on the cake. To you know, help my team win, and you know, that's what it's all about. And you know, I was happy I was, you know, able to do that.
Austin Riley, my guest. Listen, one day at a time, I get that, but no player in club history has reached 5 home runs as quickly as you have, at least in the live ball era. When you consider all the great players who put on that uniform, what's it like when you hear that you've done something that nobody else ever has?
You know, it's kind of incredible. It really hadn't sank in. I really feel like, you know, things are going so fast. It's going to be one of those things when I look back, you know, down the road, that's when, you know, I appreciate it most. But, you know, like you said, the guys that have come through here, Chipper Jones, all those guys, you know, to be, you know, in one of those kind of ranks, it's unbelievable, and I'm very thankful.
Austin Riley, my guest. You know, to be mentioned like that's amazing. I would imagine when you get into a situation like the one you're in right now, Austin, you probably just kind of want to fit in. But your teammates already are raving. As an example, reliever Luke Jackson said after yesterday's game, quote, "It was a great team win," and the human cheat code himself, Austin Riley, just doing it day in and day out. Catcher Tyler Flowers said, quote, "I mean, he can hit. I think we can see that already. He can hit. Nothing else to say. He can hit," end of quote. And it goes on and on. What's it like to hear that kind of respect from your current teammates already?
You know, it's kind of, you know, welcoming, and you know, that comfort level is just because, you know, like you said, I'm a rookie, kind of, you know, like you said, just wanting to fit in, kind of want to be, you know, not in the picture, just kind of, you know, fly on the wall kind of thing. And, you know, for, you know, to be able to perform, and, you know, for them to say that means a lot, just to, you know, going forward, to, you know, to kind of have that trust, you know, when I am at the plate, you know, whether I'm at third, left field, you know, they trust me, you know, trust that I'm gonna get the job done.
Austin, the story itself also about the call-up is pretty amazing. I want to underline that. I mean, this all went down. Last Tuesday, you were playing for Gwinnett. You're on the road in Buffalo. There's an injury with the big league club. Your manager, Damon Berryhill, is trying to find you, but he can't reach you. Eventually, he calls one of your teammates. He tracks you down in a hotel room. Like, lay that out for me. How did that all go down, and what do you remember about hearing you were getting that call-up finally?
So, after the game, You know, there was really talk around the players saying, hey, you know, Ender, come out of the game. You know, they were like, Riley, it's your turn, it's your turn. I'm like, you know, you never know. So I went back to the hotel, and I got a new phone number this past offseason, and I guess my manager had my old phone number because I was just sitting on my phone talking to, you know, after the game, I always call my dad. You know, we talk about the game. And then it was me and Colby Allard, my roommate. We were sitting in Bryce Wilson's room just chatting, whatever. And he gets a phone call, Colby does, and he's like, hey, Riley, it's Damon. And then Damon's like, hey, man, you know, you're going to the league, grass, blah, blah, blah. Next time I call you, you better answer the phone. And I was like, I'm on my phone. I don't know why I missed it. And I ended up having my old number, but it's crazy. It happened quick and, you know, kind of a blur.
Those stories are great. I love it. Austin Riley joining us. I'm glad you mentioned your dad. Like, I can kind of relate on some weird level, Austin, because I've got a couple of kids who play baseball. My older son played through his senior year in high school. My younger son still plays travel ball. I can only imagine, and I get such a kick out of talking to my kids about ball. I can only imagine what it's like for you to talk to your dad. You learned the game from your dad, Mike, when you were growing up in Mississippi. So what was it like to work on the game with him, and what did you learn from him back in the day?
You know, the biggest thing is, you know, always the biggest, you know, lesson he ever taught me was always stay even keel, no matter the good days, no matter the bad days. You know, he never, you know, gave me the big head, you know, never hammered me when things were going bad, but, you know, he let me know whenever things weren't, you know, going right. And, you know, that was the biggest thing he, you know, he always preached was, you know, this game, it's a game of failure, and, you know, you just got to take it day by day, whether it's good or bad. You just got to kind of ride that level plane. And, you know, that's kind of the biggest thing I took from him. You know, he was my only hitting coach growing up. You know, he taught me how to hit. I still hit the same way, you know, I did when I was 10. Never really changed much. And, I give him all the credit in the world.
Dude, that's incredible. That's incredible in the sense that, like, when my kids were growing up, you know, at some point I've got to hand them over to somebody else who's more technically inclined than I am, who's got more knowledge than I do, and I understand this, and I see the progress they make. Isn't that amazing? Like, everything you learned or the stuff you learned from him, and you still hit the same way. He's still your go-to guy, right?
Yeah, he is, for sure. You know, there's also, you know, my minor league coaches, I give them a lot that I
sure.
kind of credit to, just because, you know, the little things that they critique. But whenever, you know, things are really going bad, I call him, and, you know, he's watching every game, and, you know, he can, you know, and I know how you can relate. He sees stuff that I don't see, you know, that other hitting coaches don't see. He just, you know, he's seen me so much, he can point it out, and, you know, it helps a lot.
Austin Riley joining us. All right, and then there's the time that you spent working in the offseason. I know you worked with Albert Pujols this past offseason for a little bit of time. He is one of the all-time great hitters. What was that experience like?
It was incredible. I tell everybody, he didn't hit one bad ball the 3 days I hit with him.
Huh.
Everything he hit was perfect, line drive, back of the middle, gap to gap. I mean, it was just incredible. And to talk to him and, you know, to kind of pick his brain about some stuff hitting-wise, you know, the biggest thing he said to me is that I needed to stay on my legs a little bit more. You know, I can really tap into more of my power, and, you know, it's helped a lot. And, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, no doubt. It's been incredible to spend a couple of days with him.
So let me finally ask you, you've played 7 games in left field. You played a couple of games at third base, your natural position, and you're coming up to the majors and you're facing pitchers you haven't seen, playing a position you've only played a few times in your life. None of this seems to bother you at all. How do you explain that, and where does that focus come from?
You know, I think it's just, you know, every kid's dream is to play in the big leagues. And for me, it didn't matter where it was, if it was pitching or, you know, pitching, catching, outfield, left field, wherever. I just wanted to be there. And, you know, in order to stay there, you got to perform. And I think, you know, that's kind of that, you know, that mentality I have. You know, I got to perform. I got to play a decent position, you know, in order to stay here. And that's kind of the way I took it is, you know, it's, you know, I'm going to lose a spot if I don't perform. And, you know, it's been a lot more relaxing out there than, you know, in the infield, just because balls aren't hit as quick at you, I guess, as the hot corner, but it's been good.
It's been great. He's off to a great start. 5 home runs, 12 runs batted in since being called up and hitting .389. Austin Riley of the Braves. Austin, really nice to meet you. Great to have you on the show. Congrats on the quick start. Hope we can do it again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Let's go to San Diego. Connor in San Diego. Connor, what's up? How are you?
Romy, thanks to the Vine. Epic. Listen to the Roger Lodge podcast. It was pretty good. The guy is such a clone. It's amazing. He's a failed waiter. And then he falls forward and gets the blind date gig. This guy's like the Lane Kiffin of talk. Smoke weed, talk bleep, like Roger Lodge. Remember his whole he'll shave his head deal? Dude should be bald by now. What a kook without the nicks and cuts of a blade. But, Rome, the real reason for my call, I know you saw the Dan Wetzel article. I mean, down here in Diego, this is ridiculous. There's a pervert in the neighborhood? Private Winslow? I mean, you know it's bad when he doesn't even need, you know, the internet. He just probably gets off watching.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call. I don't like that call.
Yeah, bro, that's not really
not
funny.
A very good call.
Private Winslow exposing himself to neighbors. Yeah, it's not good. That's not funny. We had Connor from San Diego in hour number one who got us started. Let's go there again. Rick in San Diego. What's going on, Rick? How are you?
Good. What's up, Jim?
What's up?
Man, I'm so honored to be in the jungle, man. As SoCal native, I've listened to the show for over 23 years, and I've never called the show until now.
Great.
And, man, I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate your commitment to excellence and the passion that you bring every day. I recently discovered the podcast, and, man, I absolutely love it. You know, sustained greatness has always amazed me, like watching MJ near the end of his career, still getting in teammates' faces, and Jerry Rice still outworking every rookie on the team. Tiger Woods, all that he's been through, shaking his fist and giving it everything he has to come back and win another major. Tom Brady, to this day, working his butt off and bringing nothing but excellence and passion on the field. And, Jim, you know, it amazes me after all these years that you still bring just the passion, the energy, every single day. Mediocrity is not an option, and I appreciate that so much. And, you know, not only do I believe the Jungle is the greatest sports radio show ever, but I believe it's the greatest radio show, period. And, Jim, all the time you tell us when it comes to Hollywood, actors or actresses and athletes, you never really know these guys. And, Jim, I've never had the honor to meet you. But I think we got a pretty good idea of who you are, the kind of person you are, the father, the boss, the husband. And over the years, you know, I've heard you talk a lot about your dad, and there's no question that professionally he'd be super proud of you. But as a father myself, I bet your dad would be even more proud of the type of man that you are. And so, Jim, just because I've never called the show after listening for over 23 years doesn't mean I'm any less of a clone than these hacks that call every single week. But, Jim, when you cut me, I bleed clone. And so thank you for the time. Thank you for the Vine. And, Jim, I appreciate you, man. Have a great day. I'm out.
My man, Marty. Rick, thanks for calling. No, Rick, I appreciate that very much. Thank you. Man, my man loves me. Cal in Las Vegas, currently holding on to a golden ticket. Hey, Cal, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Hey, Jim, Matt and Van thinks you some badass because you've been pumping him up lately. Congratulations, Matt. You fulfilled your lifelong dream of becoming a smack-off guy. And now what? 12 years of brown-nosing finally paid off. But Team Canada is nothing but hype. They're just a couple of stuttering idiots. Matt, I made you famous. Before you came out to Vegas and rolled with the big dog, you were a nobody. Man, who's your daddy? Jim, I don't know if you know this, but Matt tried to pull a fast one last summer and put his hero Mike and Indy in the smack-off call. I sniffed that out and blew that whole thing up. I'm not letting Mike sneak into the smack off like some little bitch. That's why he got all mad and, quote, unretired the next day. And that was so embarrassing for Mike. He came in here rocking a pair of Nike high tops and a Washington Wizards gamer, looking like some broke-ass Michael Jordan. Man, Mike's been to 10 smack offs and has half a title to show for it. Hey, Mike, let me give you some advice. Instead of wasting your time sliding into my sister's DMs, go tighten up your smack-off call, you pervert. Thanks for the Vine, Jim. War!
cheeks in Studio City, filling his jacuzzi with nacho cheese sauce and trying to eat his way out of it. Unwore, that pencil neck geek, Stephen H. Town. Dude put me at the bottom of the pile at 30-1 to win the smack off. Please.
Cal in Vegas. This guy's good. He can cut the line. Hey, Matt, what's up?
What up, Rome? That was a hell of an ATP from Portland, woman. But anyway, Cal in Vegas is a deluded, psychotic, hooker-addicted moron. What the hell was that perverted crackhead even talking about, Rome? The smacky chopper pilot is incensed he didn't get to pick up that short, fat loser from Vegas. And as for allegedly teaming up with Mikey De La Creme last year, yeah, I did approach him about it. And all he said to me was, no can do, playa. I only go hard on Chael's taint, so y'all can't.
Matt Vancouver.
No. You don't like that car.
I don't like that car. Not a very good car.
Hey, Matt.
Good night now.